Welcome to the Alpha Female Podcast with me, your host, Robin Baldwin. This show is to inspire you to embrace living like an alpha female. But what is an alpha female? An alpha female is a powerful and assertive woman. Her confidence is due to being an intelligent and intellectual problem solver. She chooses ambition and is proud of it, but strives for a happy and healthy work-life harmony. An alpha female puts herself first, sticks to her priorities, but nurtures relationships with all the people in her life. So let's get started. If you're listening to this show, you've been drawn to create work-life harmony in your life. I wanted to share a quick story on why I fell in love with essential oils back in 2014. So after my MS diagnosis, I won an intro kit by doTERRA that included a bottle of peppermint, lavender, and lemon essential oil. At the time, I was trying to figure out how to take care of myself differently than I was before, and one of the building blocks of health that I was tackling at the time was getting better sleep. I had horrible insomnia. After leaving a toxic relationship in 2012, I was filled with so much anxiety most nights, and my brain was always racing. I couldn't stop my thoughts. So this is when I was trying to set up a more conscious evening routine. And I would simply put 2 drops of lavender in an Epsom salt bath every night. And slowly this became the routine that signaled to my body it was time to go to bed. After I ran out of the doTERRA oil and grabbed another bottle of lavender from the health food store, I opened it and realized instantly when smelling it that it wasn't the same. And that's when I started beginning to research the company that I eventually fell in love with. So doTERRA's practices from sourcing the essential oils from the best place in the world that the plant grows, using sustainable sourcing methods, and truly empowering farmers and harvesters with the co-impact sourcing method, and then having incomparable transparent testing practices to create pure, potent, and therapeutic grade essential oils were absolutely amazing. And then finally, the company has a heart of gold. Through their Healing Hands Charitable Division, they empower farmers and harvesting communities and bring them necessities that they need to thrive. So if we go into a community to harvest a specific essential oil, and let's say the community doesn't have a school, then the Healing Hands charity is able to bring that to the community. Sometimes it's running water, sometimes it's health clinics, sometimes it's building hospitals. But that's what truly made me fall in love with the company. So if you haven't had a chance to sample doTERRA essential oils yet, I'd love to send you a few samples. So find me on Instagram. Just go to @RobinBaldwin, RobinBaldwin. And just send me a DM saying, I want oils. And then from there, we'll chat about what your body is needing in terms of self-care so I can make you a personalized care package. Have you downloaded the Work-Life Harmony worksheet yet? In this free guide, I walk you through how to optimize 5 key areas of your life so that you can start designing your own work-life harmony. So from nutrition to supplements, sleep, stress management, and reducing your toxic load, I share tips and tricks that get you thinking on how you can optimize your life currently. So I ask you simple questions that just get you to rethink different aspects of your life. I walk you through a prioritization exercise so you can figure out which area of your life you actually want to maybe overhaul or tackle or just make small changes in first. So you can download that over at bit.ly/work-life-harmony-worksheet, all one word, bit.ly/work-life-harmony-worksheet. You are listening to the Alpha Female Podcast, episode 174. All links and show notes can be found over at robinbaldwin.com/podcast. Today on the show, we're talking to Emily Fletcher. Emily is the founder of Ziva Meditation and the leading expert in meditation for extraordinary performance. Her book, Stress Less, Accomplish More, debuted at number 7 out of all books on Amazon. The New York Times, Good Morning America, The Today Show, Vogue, and ABC News have all featured Emily's work. She's been named one of the top 100 women in wellness to watch and has taught more than over 20,000 students around the world. She's spoken on meditation for performance at Apple, Google, Harvard Business School, and Barclays Bank. And Ziva graduates include Oscar, Grammy, Tony, and Emmy Award winners, as well as NBA players, Navy SEALs, Fortune 500 CEOs, and busy parents. So the Ziva technique is a powerful trifecta of mindfulness, meditation, and manifesting designed to unlock your full potential. Its benefits include decreased stress, deeper sleep, improved immune function, and extraordinary performance. I absolutely loved the chat with Emily. I felt like it was just, a phone call with a best friend. She has such a warm tone, such an amazing energy around her. And I'm really excited for you guys to learn a little bit more about how yoga and meditation have shown up in her world and how she uses it to improve others' lives. So let's get into the show. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited to dive into everything with you. When I can't remember who suggested you for the show, but I, as soon as I looked you up and stalked you on Instagram, as I love to do with my future guests, I was like, yep, definitely an alpha female. Can't wait to get her on. So when I sent you over the definition that not only I created, but a lot of my guests have actually had input in, what did you think of the definition?
I definitely identify with it. I loved the being the brightest star in your constellation. I think that that really speaks to me. And I think with anyone, when you're true to your authenticity, when you can really be confident and brave about who you are in the world, I think it serves everyone around you. Mm. I think if we try to over-adapt to our friends or our family or our partners, then it's a lie, really. And I like the idea of putting yourself first. I mean, this is one of the big things that I teach all my clients, but certainly my ladies and my moms, of like, you cannot pour from an empty cup. And it's not a good look. Like, martyrdom, you can only be a martyr if you're dealing with limited resources. And once you start a meditation practice, you're tapping into the infinite creativity, infinite energy, infinite time. And so you can't be a martyr if you have unlimited resources. And so I like the idea of, you know, putting yourself first.
Mm-hmm. So have you always seen yourself as an alpha female, or has that developed over time?
I've always been that. I've always been quite a leader and quite confident. I was always very tall. I don't know if that's a thing, but I'm hearing it more and more as we're waking up to our own biases and our own racism and, you know, sexism that, you know, which we all have, but we favor tall men, especially. There's like it's almost an advantage to be a tall man, but I think it is as well as a woman. Maybe once you get past 12 years old, when you know, it's awkward to be the tallest girl or you're taller than all the boys. Like, I didn't love that.
Yeah.
But I was always quite tall and quite mature. Like, I went from 11 to 30. You know, I was a little girl and then I was 30. And so everyone just assumed I was older and more mature. I remember when I was a little girl, I went to my first sleepaway camp, and I'd never seen or ridden a horse before. And there was horseback riding as one of the activities. And they gave me like the oldest, meanest, angriest horse that was the hardest to ride, because they thought I was 17, but I was like 9. And so I'm with this really terrifying horse. And so I think, you know, there's a pro and con to everything, but people always assumed I was older and more experienced and maybe more mature than I was, which I think gives you a lot of advantages in life, but also some tricky situations. Like, I moved to New York when I was 15 to model, and, you know, that's not a great idea to send a 15-year-old girl
to New York
City by herself. But in my mind, I was like, oh yeah, I'm good. I'll be able to handle this. No problem.
Interesting. Did you always hold yourself? Like, did you always have really good posture too? 'Cause I wonder if that also came with like having this stature and this presence in a room.
Well, I was a dancer since I was in fourth grade, and started studying it more intensely at 16. So that affects your posture, that affects how you enter a room. You know, being on stage from an early age definitely impacted my presence. But what happened in high school was a type of diminishing where it was very clear that I was one of the smartest in the class, or I was going to be the lead in the plays. And I started the dance team, and, you know, I was like that girl. Mm-hmm. And in a small-ish town, I think I started dealing with a little bit of tall poppy syndrome, and it wasn't other people necessarily doing it to me. It was more me doing it to myself. I started shrinking, playing small, dimming my light, I wanted people to like me more than I wanted to be successful for a little while. Mm-hmm. And there was this one incident where I was the understudy in Cinderella. We were doing the play Cinderella, and I was understudying Cinderella, but I was 15. I was a freshman, and the girl playing Cinderella was a senior, and she was dating the guy who played Prince Charming. And because and understudies don't normally get any shows, but they gave me 7 out of the 15 shows. So we're basically double cast. Hmm. It wasn't really an understudy, but because I got so many shows, it made the rest of the cast mad. They didn't think it was fair since she was a senior and she was dating Prince Charming. So all the other people in the cast made a pact that they were going to ruin the shows that I was the lead in. And it worked back to me, and I was devastated. I was so sad that they were my friends. And mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't understand, why would you ruin this thing that we've all created together? I didn't do anything to hurt you. I didn't do anything wrong. Mm. But it was, and so that was, I think, when I started the tall poppy syndrome, and I was like, oh, I want them to like me. I'd rather be in with the club.
Let me shrink myself.
Yeah, than shining as the star in this show. And so that stayed with me for a little while. And then I read Ayn Rand's Fountainhead at 17 or something.
Okay.
And, which is all about, the aggrandizement almost of the ego, and is the capitalistic creed. And even that could be taken to, a lot of people justify a lot of terrible behaviors based on that book. But the thing for me in that time, it allowed me to own my power again and be like, oh, civilizations are progressed on top of people's egos. People, they innovate, they create new architecture, they start new companies because they are ultimately serving their ego. And so I don't think the ego is bad. I just think it's gotten a little out of balance, So we've gotten so masculine, so hyper-achieving, so ego-driven, and we've forgotten the other side, the femininity, the receptivity, the flow. And that's when I think, we get sick as a society, because it's got to be both.
Oh my gosh, there's so much in there. I love that you got so enlightened at such a young age. I had a very similar situation. I do wonder if most of my alpha females were in some sort of childhood hobby or sport, because I was a ballerina, and it came really, really easy to me. And I carried myself with such poise. I always had my shoulders back. And near the end of my dance career, when my feet got ruined from going up on point too early, I was getting all the solos. And I remember distinctly going into middle school, and the girls that were always in the back row of our classes or the back row of the performances would bully me in the gym change room. I would get kicked. I would get hit. Especially when the teachers weren't looking, I would get kicked in gym class. And I remember I started to shrink because of that.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's one of the reasons why I had to figure out who I was at that time, and I had to learn how to hold myself back upright and back with my shoulders held high. But I had such a good basis from my childhood years of developing so much confidence in ballet class, and I was in swimming as well, and I was really good at that. So I learned how to develop confidence for myself so I could relearn how to do it as an adult.
Thanks for sharing that, because I have a one-year-old son now, and it's just a good reminder that the things that are going to feel the most devastating to him, the things that I'm going to want to protect him from, are going to be the things that make him who he is. And, we all just have to surrender to that and take away the most relevant lessons.
Mm-hmm. I think also, and I've had some interesting conversations around this. I haven't really dived into it into the podcast, but I was also taught to be really proud of my accomplishments. So whenever I got an A on an exam, I would broadcast it. Like, I was so excited. And no one told me that the way that I was doing it was boastful or maybe too much in people's faces. Mm-hmm. And so I may have lacked some social graces. And then I think about that now, but it's like, we are in a boastful society. Like we have to talk about ourselves, especially if we're promoting online businesses and growing followings. But what is that balance of ensuring that you're bringing value to an audience versus just patting yourself on the back?
Yeah, I think that actually people's tolerance for boasting is going down. I think that because we're all being marketed to all the time with everyone's social media channel, it's more important than ever to be of service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the old rule in marketing is don't talk about yourself, talk about your customer. You know, just it's like the cocktail party rule. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be stuck in a cocktail party with someone who's talking about themselves. You want to ask questions about the people you're listening to. And yeah. And so, but I love that was it your parents that taught you that?
Yeah. Yeah, because my grandfather and my dad were overachievers, and my dad has a PhD from Harvard. So like he was, yeah.
In what?
Economics, which I did not do well on in university. So I was always taught to be proud, and I didn't know until my grandfather passed away that he was actually a president of a very popular airline in Canada.
Cool.
So, but he never talked about his stuff. Like he never boasted, but he always wanted to know, you know, how did I do on the test? So he installed this like curiosity in me of someone asking me about myself. And I thought it was okay to always talk about myself instead. but now I have learned, looking back on it, that he was so good at asking other people about themselves and exactly what you're talking about now. Like how do we make ourselves most interesting by showing more interest in the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well said.
Okay, cool. So we read before we started recording the bio. So everybody knows all of the amazing things that you're doing in the world from, you know, founding Ziva Meditation to launching your book earlier this year. So talk to us about what work-life harmony looks like for you as you kind of move through 2019.
I love that you're using harmony and not balance. Mm-hmm. Is that a Jeff Bezos inspired change?
I've been using that since 2016. So if he's been using it afterwards, he's an alpha female podcast listener.
Yes, I hope he is. I really hope he is. And though I do want to quickly shout out, apparently he is like donating tons and tons of money to climate change, and they're going solar with their delivery vehicles. And I'm just really thrilled that he's stepping up in that way because, but we can talk about that later, another podcast. So work-life harmony for me, there's micro and macro in that. My schedule is relatively flexible, if not dependable. And so in a day, I can really meditate whenever I want to. I can work out whenever I want to. I mean, I can find pockets in my day to do the self-care practices that I know that I have to be sane and perform at the level that I do. And that feels great. I feel really grateful that I've created a life like that. But then there's the big in that. You know, my son was born in February. So I'm not great at math, but I think he was 7 months old at the actual launch date. But anyone who's launched a book knows that it's really a 3-year project, but it's most intense in this 9 months leading up to pub date. And we really wanted to make the New York Times. That was our big goal. And so that means that's all about your pre-sales and all the books that you sell in your first week. That's your best chance of making the New York Times as a first-time author. Mm-hmm. And so it was full out. And so I was going, and I think this answers other questions, but like when things felt out of whack, but I was hitting it really hard. I mean, my son was nursing every 3 hours, day and night. And I was in the middle of this book launch. So I was podcasting from, you know, sometimes 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. I was running my team, just you name it. Like we did it, preparing for it. And it was all intense and amazing and fun. But then 2 days after the book came out, it was doing very, very well. It was selling like crazy. We launched up to like number 7 out of all books on Amazon and threw this amazing launch party in New York City. And 2 days after it comes out, we're not even finish week one and my publisher writes me and goes, hey, can we start talking about book two? And I wanted to like reach through the computer and like punch her in the face. You recognize that this is a, you know, a very high class problem, that the book was doing so well that they wanted to talk about book two. But it, like my visceral angry reaction to that question was a very clear indicator to me that I was living not in harmony, that I had been working hard for too long, which I knew, like it was very clear that this was going to be an intended thing to do that. And it was worth it. You know, baby's doing great. Book is doing great. They are the joys of my life. And it was worth it. But after we got through the intensity of the book launch, and as my son got a little older, I was like, I got a downshift. Like I cannot be a hypocrite. I don't want to be preaching meditation and stressing less and be burning myself out. Yeah. And so I was happy to hit it. And thank goodness for my rock star background, you know, thank goodness I'm like a former showgirl and I know how to put on my rock star pants and power it out when necessary, but I'm very aware that it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so, that was a bit of a macro where I was, it would say maybe 7 to 9 months of really hitting it. And then afterwards I've been downshifting. So I will, and even if it's a weekday and if I don't have anything scheduled that I have to do, I'll just mark it off. Like I'm taking a day off. Mm-hmm. I also have a nanny who is amazing and helps me with my son. And I'm so grateful because I oftentimes work from home. And so even though she's here with him, like technically responsible, if I'm not podcasting or on the phone with my team, if he's playing and not napping, then I can just go play with him. So I see him every couple of hours. So it's these beautiful, like that goes back to the micro balance. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll work for a couple hours and play for a couple hours, work and play and work and play. So it's, mm-hmm. it's great right now.
Mm, that's nice. Yeah. We've had really interesting conversations over the past 4 years on the podcast. And I had, especially in year one, I had a lot of guests coming on who believed in having different seasons of life. And in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, like I get that. So if you're in like a book launch or an online course launch, or you start a new corporate job, like that's all, you're all in for a while. And your work is probably a little bit higher than your life in terms of the number of hours or in terms of the output of energy. And in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, that's okay. As long as you're taking care of yourself through that time and you're happy and healthy, you can have that kind of imbalance, or just extra hours of work, extra energy in work. But it's not completely sustainable because you hear over and over again. And I was watching some of these guests who were talking about it. They're like, oh, it's just a season of life. And then as soon as that season ended, they were talking about burnout and adrenal fatigue and having to like rest and reset. And I was like, see, I knew that was going to happen. So it's been fascinating to kind of have these conversations because even I do it to myself. My alpha, my masculine energy side gets really, really excited. I create new things. I launch new courses. And then after it launches, I'm just like, holy crap, I totally have nothing left. Like I just need to pull back. And so I know it's an alpha female issue that we're constantly learning just how much we can push versus be, and bring in that feminine energy of allowing in creativity without output.
Mm. And that's one of the beautiful things about meditation is that it puts the micro balance in your day. You know, if you start a daily practice, and what I teach at Ziva is, or in the book and in Aron on the course, it's 15 minutes twice a day. And because it's so restorative, it's so rejuvenating, it's so surrendered, and therefore I think so feminine, it's receptive, that it's this micro balance inside your day. Mm. And it allows you, it's yin energy that allows you to then go yang. And so people, even that people can use as an addiction, you know, they can use it to fuel their workaholism if they choose. but what most people find is that if you start meditating every day, twice a day, you don't have to work as hard because you're smarter and you're faster and you're more efficient. So what used to take you 5 hours starts to take you more like three. Now the idea that you used to like ruminate over and torture yourself about making the decision, you just are like, oh, this company, that person, and those shoes, like it's not even a thing anymore. Your intuition gets so loud that you, the time you used to spend or waste deliberating gets much, much shorter.
I've had some really cool conversations. So I did an entire series with different guests around masculine and feminine energy. And I always thought that my morning meditation practice, my seated practice was me being in my feminine energy. And I had a guest come on and was like, no, dear, like that's your divine masculine. Like you're holding a container of space. And I was like, oh, and I was like kind of mind blown because I was like, but I'm not doing anything. And I've always seen masculine.
How is holding a container masculine?
I've had different, like different kind of definitions from different people. Mm-hmm. So I've had one guest that said meditation was very divine masculine because you're sitting in silence, in peace and no movement. And she really believed that feminine energy is all about movement.
Interesting.
So that was fascinating to me because I could see, yeah, like I'm still doing something every morning. Like I have this routine, I have this habit that I am, you know, sitting in stillness, and it allows me to potentially be more creative, tap into my intuition so that I can listen to the wisdom within versus the mind. So I was like, okay, yeah, I can see how this is, but I was so proud of myself for actually, you know, starting and keeping a seated meditation practice that I was like, oh, I really thought this was me being in my feminine.
I mean, I feel that meditation can be very feminine. I think it's very receptive. I think that it's very surrendered. It's you know, bowing at the feet of nature and trusting that nature has more information than we do. And it's receptive. I think I find it very feminine. Now that said, I think a lot of practices and a lot of lineages are very like male dominated, and there are certainly masculine techniques, but I find it quite feminine. P.S. It's also why I started my company and created my technique, is that I was like, oh, these are very masculine lineages and very male dominated traditions. And what is the divine feminine trying to communicate? And what can I bring to this conversation? And how can I solve people's challenges and pain points that they're facing today in this day and age?
Yeah.
And as we are in this awakening of the divine feminine. So,
That's cool. So. No, I love that. I love having more than one perspectives because it allows my guests to listen to everything and go, oh, okay, that resonates with me. That doesn't really resonate. It's allowing us to choose. And okay, this wasn't a question, but I want to know how meditation found you or how you found meditation.
So I was on Broadway for 10 years and my last show was A Chorus Line, where my job was to—
Who were you?
Well, I understudied Sheila, Val, and Judy.
I was Val in a community play really long time ago.
Oh, fun. So Val, actually, so I was a really good Sheila. I was a mediocre Judy, and I was a terrible Val. And understudying Val is the thing that drove me to meditation, because she used to call out of the show all the time. So I'd get thrown on halfway through the show at a role that I knew that I sucked at. Oh, yeah. And as an alpha female, I do not like sucking at things. I like being good at things. And so it was so embarrassing to be on stage in a leotard and a downlight and just being terrible and knowing that you're being terrible. And so anyway, that led to anxiety, which led to insomnia. I couldn't sleep through the night for 18 months. I started getting sick and injured. I started going gray at 27. And I was just like, this is not my dream. And so thankfully the woman sitting next to me in the dressing room was understudying five of the lead roles, including Cassie, and crushing, you know, every dance, every bite of food, every song was a celebration. And I was like, what do you know that I don't know? And she said, I meditate, to which I promptly rolled my eyes and thought, oh no, one of you. And then I just kept sucking at my job and going gray and having insomnia. And then finally, I was so embarrassed about my performance that I was like, I have to try something. So I went along to this intro to meditation talk, signed up for this 4-day course. On the first day of the first course, I was meditating, which means I was like in a different state of consciousness than I had ever been in before. And I liked it. And then that night I slept through the night for the first time in 18 months. Mm. And I have every night since. And that was 11 years ago. And then I stopped going gray. I'm 40 now. I have one gray hair. I was legitimately going gray in my 20s. I did not get sick for 8.5 years. And I started enjoying my job again. And so I just thought, why does everyone not do this? Left Broadway, went to India, started what became a 3-year teacher training. Mm-hmm. And then opened up Ziva, I guess, almost how many years ago was it? It's 2019 now. I started in 2011. So it's 8 years ago I started the company. And it's been the best thing I've ever done.
So what led you to create this specific technique?
Well, in the first few years of teaching, I was just teaching meditation, and that was great and it was awesome. But I started noticing that people were having some resistance, and I wanted to really lean into that. And the world is filled with ex-meditators. You know, how many people have tried meditation and thought, well, I can't do that because I can't clear my mind, or I can't do that because I'm too busy. And so I started really digging deep and be like, what's behind this? What's underneath this? Like, why do you think you're too busy? Why do you think you have to clear your mind? And then with my students, what was happening for them is that there was feelings that were coming up. There was emotions and trauma and stress and anxiety that we've all been storing in our body and ourselves that was starting to come up and out. And they didn't necessarily have the tools. They weren't equipped to deal with that. And this I find a lot in the meditation community. No one's talking about this purge that happens. When you start a really powerful meditation practice, there's usually some sort of a catharsis that happens. And since no one's talking about it, no one expects it or knows it's going to happen. And then they freak out when it does. And so this is where I feel like that's when I stopped and I was like, okay, what do I have to bring to this party? How is the divine feminine trying to move through me? Because the masculine part of these traditions is usually eye on the prize. Let's move towards enlightenment. Let's just increase our state of consciousness. And if feelings come up, well, don't worry about those. That's just stress leaving the body. Let's just keep moving forward, 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 up, 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 up. Hmm. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If you don't empower people to feel and process and integrate this stress, this trauma, this rage, this anxiety, this sadness that the meditation is wringing out of you, then you can never fully be enlightened if you don't heal your shadow, if you don't look at your darkness, if you don't look at your trauma, if you don't look at the traits that you've inherited from your parents, there's no way you're going to gain enlightenment or the best version of you, which is really how I define enlightenment, by the way. It's just the most amazing version of you. Mm-hmm. And so I saw this healing catharsis, this purging, as an opportunity to really like lean into it, which is a decidedly feminine thing. And these are full blown gender stereotypes, but this is called the alpha female. So I'm going to go ahead and lean into that. And this is again, a stereotype, but women have a tendency to be more willing to feel, talk about, and process the entirety of their emotions. You know, it's part of our habits, maybe, or perhaps our civilization or socialization. And so I think empowering people, talking about, warning people that these things might happen, and then empowering them with tools to feel these things when and if they come, helps people to feel it more fully and then move through to the new now. And so what the Ziva technique is it's a trifecta of mindfulness, meditation, and manifesting. So the three M's, that's the Ziva technique: mindfulness, meditation, and manifesting. And a lot of people think that mindfulness and meditation are the same thing. They're not. I would define mindfulness as the art of bringing your awareness into the present moment, mm-hmm. right? Which is beautiful and necessary. So most of the apps out there, most of the YouTube videos, the drop-in studios are teaching what I would call mindfulness. Anytime someone's guiding you through something, anytime you're focusing on your breath, mindfulness, which is very good at dealing with your stress in the now. It's very good at creating a state change. Mm-hmm. Now, the type of meditation that I teach is very powerful, and it was designed for people with busy minds and busy lives. And this is very good at getting rid of your stress from the past. So all that stuff that we've been storing in ourselves, that breakup, that dog that barked in your face when you were 5, your parents divorced when you were 12, like that stuff gets stored in our cellular memory. And this meditation gives your body rest that's so restful. That sounded redundant, but it's giving your body rest that's 5 times deeper than sleep. Mm-hmm. And so you're de-exciting the nervous system and giving the body the chance to heal all this old stuff. And that's when that catharsis can happen. And then the third M is manifesting, which is you consciously creating a life you love, you getting intentional about your dreams. But the way that the first two M's can work in harmony with each other is that when that purge can happen, when those intense feelings start to come up and out, people have the mindfulness to use for triage. It's like, oh, here come those feelings. Let me use the mindfulness to sit into them, to feel it fully, to close the feedback loop between my brain and body so that I can really process these as they're coming up and out, versus pretending that they're not there or panicking and thinking something's wrong with me, or just saying like, well, I'm just going to focus on enlightenment and don't worry about those pesky emotion things.
It's interesting. Would you say that the three M's are also very tied to the present, the past, and the future?
1,000%. So yeah. Mindfulness, very good at dealing with your stress in the now. Meditation, getting rid of your stress from the past and manifesting for your dreams for the future.
Oh, that's so cool. There was something else that you said about meditation. And I wonder, because you did spend time in India, is it very similar to a yoga nidra practice?
It is quite similar to yoga nidra. I would say it's one of the most similar, because there's not too much out there that's like this, mm-hmm. but it is similar, except for you do it sitting up, not laying down.
Okay.
And there's not long scripts. You're not having someone else, you know, walk you through
guide you through.
Yeah. You basically are given a tool that you start to learn how to induce that deep restful state for yourself. And you do it in a way that isn't taking you into sleep. It's taking you into a fourth state of consciousness, which I call the bliss field. And this is where the right and left hemispheres of the brain are functioning in unison and where we're giving our body that deep rest. So it's a deep physical rest, but the mind is very alert. Mm-hmm. So it's different than sleep, which yoga nidra is called yogic sleep. Mm-hmm. Whereas the meditation portion of Ziva is based on something called Nishkam Karma Yoga, which means union attained by action hardly taken, or the lazy man's meditation, which I love because it's easy and you don't have to focus or clear your mind or sit in uncomfortable positions. You can do this thing on a bus or on a train or in your office or with your kids in the next room.
Wow, that's so cool. Have you done any brainwave studies?
Not me personally, yeah. But we are partnering on, I think next Tuesday, we're starting our first scientific research with George Washington University. They are teaching Ziva online, which is our online training. They're giving that to all of their graduate students, or maybe it's like all in a department. It's 400 graduate students,
yeah.
And they're doing a control against people who are just doing mindfulness. So people doing the full Ziva technique and just mindfulness, which I'm thrilled about. Mm. And then also we're partnering hopefully soon with Stanford. So the head of Huberman Lab, which is Andrew Huberman, is a friend and a Ziva graduate, and he's doing some really cool stuff based on, with virtual reality. So now that we have virtual reality, we can put humans into different states where we couldn't before. You know, you can stimulate like animals' brains to stimulate the fight or flight response, but you obviously can't probe a human who's alive. But now with virtual reality, we can put people into like shark diving situations or spiders or snakes and get them really truly into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And then they're starting to test different styles of meditation to see what's best at getting you, you know, from the sympathetic into the parasympathetic, out of, you know, fight or flight into stay and play. And so I'm really hopeful about that. But George Washington University is starting. So I'm excited.
That's so cool. I find it fascinating. I'm very much, I used to say I'm 50-50 science and woo, but it's very much like going towards the woo side. And
same, really.
But I still,
science is catching up to what these Indian dudes have been saying for thousands of years.
I'm still loving the research because it's so cool to just be able to have like quick bite-sized pieces of information that you can fire off at someone who's science-brained and they're like, oh, I get it. And you're like, great.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so that's cool. If you were in an elevator with someone, an alien, let's do an alien has landed on Earth, they've gotten into an elevator with you, and they ask you what you do, and you say that you teach meditation, and they ask you what meditation is, what would you say in like simple words? Because you've explained the technique, but how do you even like drill it down more simply?
I would say it is a restful tool that allows you to perform at the top of your game. It's like a nap. It's a supercharged power nap without the sleep hangover that allows you to show up as the most amazing version of you.
Do you have a favorite time of day to meditate?
Well, the best times of day is in the morning before coffee, breakfast, computer, and then at any point before dinner. Like, so where you would have had that afternoon coffee or nap or chocolate or chips, where you start making mistakes or reaching for the food or the pick me ups. Mm-hmm. That's when you want to do your second meditation, ideally right before that slump hits.
That's so cool. Okay. You gave us a little bit of an insight into what it was like, you know, after the book launched, but I know that there's probably a lot of my listeners that maybe want to publish their first book or are in the midst of writing or are thinking about self-publishing or finding a publisher. So can you kind of tell us what your experience was like, in as broad terms as you'd like?
Sure. So I always knew somewhere in the back of my mind that I would write a book. And I actually wrote a whole book called From Vodka to Veda. And it was hedonistic tales of being a Broadway showgirl with sneaky lessons from the Vedas woven in. And I think it's really good, but it's currently a Word doc on my computer. And I did pitch that. I think I pitched it a little bit and people, like, everyone laughed at me. They were like, no one knows who you are. No one's going to read your autobiography. And then the New York Times did a story on me and Ziva many years ago, basically about how meditation is this new networking tool. And this is, I know that sounds crazy now that that was a story, but that was a story in 2014 or 15.
Yeah.
Because it was just so weird that people were even talking about meditation at work, or that could help you advance your career. You could meet people, or there was anything other than totally hippy dippy and weird. And so Ziva was really featured in this article. And then my very first teaching gig, like when I just had graduated, there was a Crunch gym in the basement of my building. And my husband was like, you just got to be in front of people. You just got to teach. So I got a job teaching meditation in the basement of this Crunch gym in my building for like no money, and no one would show up. It was like four people would show up and it was free for them. They just had a gym membership. But the four people were diehards and they would come back again and again and again. As the New York Times article runs. And then turns out one of those people who was a diehard was a literary agent. And so she reaches out to me and said, hey, Emily, I think there's a book here. And I think that you're the perfect person to write it, all about like meditation for productivity. And I was like, oh, wow. And then I remember saying to her in this meeting, I was like, yeah, I could take 3 weeks off from teaching and write this book. And then, you know, 3 years later, the manuscript is done. And thankfully, so my agent helped me to get a publisher. We went the traditional publishing route. Mm-hmm. We met with maybe, I don't know, 11 or 12 different publishing houses. I think we got into a bidding war with five or six. And then I ended up going with HarperCollins, which was awesome. And I love my editors there. And they were great and very supportive. We never got into any like, I want this and they want this. You know, it was a very collaborative as well. Like my agent was super duper involved and really kind of birthed me into being a writer. And yeah. And then, you know, the book came out and here we are. The book has now sold 42,000 copies in 7 months, which is apparently very good. I have nothing to base that on, but my agent was like, you know, 30,000 in a year would be considered good. And so we've, you know, hopefully are going to well over double that. And by the way, we didn't make the New York Times, but if they had gone by numbers alone, we would have been number five, based on sales alone. So we really crushed the launch. I was very proud of my team. I was very sad when we didn't make the Times, but nobody really knows why and who they pick and what the reasons are for it. But, I would say there's pros and cons to going your traditional publishing route. If you really have your own platform and you can sell your own book, if you're looking to make money off your book, I would say it's best to self-publish and you have a big platform. If you're looking for a badge of honor or like a rite of passage or a way to get bigger speaking stages or to get on more traditional media, then I think that going a traditional publishing route is probably a better way to do it. That said, you know, this, and every author will tell you this, you have to pretend that you don't have a publisher. You have to pretend that every single book you sell, you're selling yourself, because that's true. Like their job is not really to market it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just not the game. It's not the name of the game. So you have to really take the publicity and the marketing on your own shoulders. Like my marketing team and I, we started well before I went on maternity leave, and which was about 9 months before the book came out. We had our full blown plan laid out. It was a 27 tab spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not a joke.
That's cool. What would you say was the daily habits that kept you healthy and happy during book launch? So when you're doing a million and one podcast interviews, and you're speaking and you're on tour, how did you stay happy and healthy?
Yeah. Well, to be totally honest, you know, the month after my son was born, which I was on maternity leave then, so I wasn't in book launch, but for a month after my son was born, I was neither healthy nor happy. I was really, really, it was very hard. It was My postpartum was brutal, and I didn't even have like quote unquote postpartum depression. Just that period was so challenging. We had a string of physical complications, both with my son and myself, and just the sleep deprivation. And I stopped meditating. I didn't meditate for a month after he was born, because I was like in a war zone. And then after a month, I started meditating maybe once a day. And then when I went back to work 2 months later, I started back to the meditation twice a day. And then, you know, it was like the clouds lifted and the fog separated. And so meditation is obviously my number one non-negotiable tool. And it's not like I'm embarrassed about the time that I stopped meditating, because my body, it needed to be in survival mode. I wasn't sleeping. And so it needed the adrenaline and cortisol to stay awake. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, but then once I started back to work and got into book launch time and it wasn't baby time, it was definitely twice a day meditation. And I would do my smoothie in the morning. I have a very specific smoothie recipe, which I can share. And my supplements, I was on a very elaborate supplement regimen, and exercise. And I wasn't doing a ton of exercise, but even 15 minutes of yoga or a 7 minute high intensity interval training was enough. So if I exercised, meditated, did my supplements and my smoothie, I was pretty much, I knew I'd be okay. But if I missed any one of those things, because I was already so depleted from the birth and I was so sleep deprived, that if I missed any of those, I was like, ooh, I'm gambling today.
So what's in the smoothie?
Okay. So now I had a pregnancy smoothie, but then my coach was like, what's in your smoothie? Maybe you need to adjust it, but here's my new one. It's, I do either like zucchini or squash as the base, which I know sounds so gross, but instead of doing banana, it's really creamy and it doesn't really have a taste if it's raw. So you can just have a little zucchini, banana, or cauliflower as the base. Then you can put in some greens, and then I do a raw egg, and then I do half an avocado, and then I do brain octane oil, Dave Asprey's brain octane oil. Mm-hmm. I do collagen powder, and then Vega chocolate protein powder. And then some berries, just like some dark berries, coconut milk, and a little water. And I blend it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, really good.
I think we call it, in Canada, we call it Vega.
Oh, that's probably correct.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's just, I believe it's a Canadian company. It's out in BC.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I love that stuff.
I find it fascinating, just like the little nuances between Canadians and Americans. I remember I went down to doTERRA's annual convention, and there's a gala on Tuesday night, and everyone was saying gala. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I do not know what a gala is, but I know what a gala is.
So my friends were there, Elena Brower and Maritza Snyder. Did you see them there?
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
Yeah.
Fun.
All right. Changing topics, kind of. This is one of my favorite questions to ask, because it gives a little bit of hindsight. It gives a little perspective on kind of your journey to date. And I do have a lot of youngins, I was going to say, listening to the podcast. But what's a piece of advice you would give to a 20-something alpha female?
Advice about what?
Stepping into her confidence. Let's do that.
Okay. Well, one thing I wish I had known is that nobody has time to think about you. Like, it's so simple, but it's so true. Everybody's so busy thinking about themselves that no one has time to think about you, really. And so all the like, what should I wear this, or should I do this, or date this person, or say that thing, or nobody cares. No one cares, because they're so wrapped up in themselves. So just do whatever the F you want. Make yourself happy, be of service to the people, contribute the things that make you happy, solve the challenges that the world is facing that you are passionate about, because no one else has time to think about you.
I love it. It really is so true. But I think we all need to hear it at any stage of life, but
yes,
especially growing up in today's social media world, I have no idea how teenagers and 20-somethings are doing it, because it's just, you know, it's it's standard to put yourself out there. And we grew up in bubbles, as I like to say. So yeah, you're like constantly have eyes on you where you only had a small community around you, at that time. Mm-hmm. So,
there's pros and cons to that, you know, like thankfully, you know, gay kids and trans kids and, you know, kids that don't necessarily have that may not have a huge population of other people in their direct community that are like them. I think that that's something that's been really healing and really helpful, that people can tap into these larger global communities mm-hmm. if they may not have one in their smaller community. So that, I mean, everything has a pro and a con, but certainly the downside is the constant like self-observation and self-editing. And, you know, it makes me crazy and I'm 40 years old mm-hmm. and I can't imagine being 20. I mean, thank all the gods and goddesses that social media was not around when I grew up.
Yeah, I don't know how I would have gotten through high school and middle school. It was already tough enough. My husband and I watched, 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. And it's dealing with very serious mental health issues in high school population. And I was just so drawn to it because I never grew up in that situation. I don't know what it's like, and I'm fascinated at how people deal with it, how you can support others. I believe the show is very controversial, but I really appreciated watching it. Especially as my husband and I want to start a family, and I have no idea how I am going to support kids as they go through this world.
Well, here's the thing, like, it's going to be something different by the time you have kids and by the time they're teenagers, it'll be a different beast. So I wouldn't worry about social media in the meantime.
Yeah. It's just curiosity about how people are navigating the world, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, my son is one and he still wants the phone all the time. I'm like, oh boy. Some good news is, we're coming out with a kids course next year. So, we'll have a kids meditation course, Ziva Kids, which I'm thrilled about. And it'll be for different ages. There'll be different modules for young kids, teens, adolescents. So I'm going to check that movie out so that I can better prepare.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. What is a pain point you're currently problem solving for in your life?
Hiring.
But he's growing really quickly, and we need new people on the team, and I'm only willing to hire rock stars. And we had someone leave and someone is on maternity leave, and the company's growing so quickly. So normally I have 5 full-time employees. We're down to 3 and we should have 7. And so bless my team's heart right now. Like they're so great, but we need more folks. And technologically speaking, like I want a full-time tech person, but because we're on WordPress, like most of our tech, and I'm going a little bit down the nerdy rabbit hole because you said you have online entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So I think this is not I don't think this is an uncommon problem, but to hire someone as a full-time developer, especially if you want like a young kid, they want to deal with the newest, sexiest, hottest technology, and WordPress ain't that. So if you're a solopreneur and you run your website on WordPress, which, you know, we have 3 websites on WordPress, it's very hard to get good young talent that when you're like, oh, can you deal with this antiquated technology? And they're like, no, I can't. What's that?
That's so interesting because I work full time for a marketing agency during the day, as a digital marketing director, and all of our websites are built on WordPress because it's the easiest CMS or content management system mm-hmm. that anyone can edit and learn the back end. So we're doing all of our websites on WordPress because it is simply the easiest.
Yes. And 60% of the internet is on WordPress. So it's not going anywhere. It's just that if you want like really, because our sites are on WordPress, but we have other like bigger technological problems that we're looking to solve and things mm-hmm. we want to create. So we need someone that's talented enough to do this higher end stuff, mm-hmm. Not just like slap up some stuff inside of the like visual editors. So,
so are you hiring locally or is your team remote?
Most of my team is here in the city. All my full-time employees are in New York City. Mm-hmm. We have a beautiful customer service team that is remote. And historically, we have had developers who are remote, but I was really hoping to have someone in the rooms with us because there's just so much creativity and collaboration that happens. But I may have to let go of that dream.
Well, if for some reason there's somebody in New York that is tech savvy, mm-hmm. then I'm sure
send them my way.
They will chase you down.
I'm also looking for, and I'm kind of, you know, just now I'm just using this as a job posting, but I'm also looking for an executive assistant and studio manager, which is probably, you know, so if there's a great, amazing, smart, you know, ass kicking alpha female in New York City who wants a great job, who's interested in meditation, call me.
I love it. Well, this is the way the word gets around. Someone may listen in and they'll be like, oh, my friend's in New York, and it passes along. And let's hope that we get you a hire.
Yay. Thank you. Two hires, please.
Two hires. Well, it's been absolutely lovely talking to you. I adore your energy and how you present yourself in this world. But will you leave the listeners with my favorite question of the show? And that is, what is your definition of happiness?
My definition of happiness is involuntarily smiling, rapture, where body's moving involuntarily, where gratitude just becomes your default. It's been weird. These past few mornings, I've been waking up and, you know, just your eyes crack. You're like, oh, the sun is up. It's morning. Like before you're even really fully conscious. And my brain is going almost immediately into gratitude. And a little bit of me is choosing it, but it's starting to feel like a, like it's just, Oh, I'm grateful for this and this and this and this and this. And that to me also is a sign of happiness. So I don't know if the gratitude leads to happiness or the happiness leads to gratitude, but either way, I'm grateful for it.
Absolutely love it. So if people want to find more of you online, where can they go?
So they can go to zivameditation.com, and Ziva is kind of a weird word, but it's Z as in zebra, I, V as in Victor, A. So zivameditation.com, and people can find our live courses, which we have one in Toronto coming up in October. We also have an online course called Ziva Online, and the book is called Stress Less, Accomplish More, and people can find that on Amazon or Audible or anywhere they like to get books.
So exciting. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me and for creating this.
Thank you for listening to the Alpha Female Podcast. Be sure and visit robinbaldwin.com, that's Robin with a Y, B-A-L-D-W-I-N, for access to show notes and other amazing blogs. If you loved this episode of the Alpha Female Podcast, be sure to head on over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review so more amazing alpha females are able to find this content. It's so very much appreciated that you take this small effort to help this show succeed. This podcast has been brought to you by the following sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Four Sigmatic, the most popular mushroom product on the market. So I've been obsessed with the shagro mushroom tea since forever. I drink it in the afternoon for a high dose of antioxidants, and the hot cacao mix with reishi mushrooms is absolutely amazing in the evening as a treat, but also to signal to my body that it's time to relax. So use the promo code ALPHAFEMALE, all one word, at checkout for 10% off. That's promo code ALPHAFEMALE at checkout for 10% off. This episode is sponsored by Anupaya. Anupaya in Sanskrit actually means pathless path. So Anupaya is an outdoor-inspired lifestyle brand offering gorgeous apparel and goods for your everyday adventures, helping you get outside and look damn good while you're at it. They are committed to sourcing responsible and ethical products and using sustainable and post-consumer recycled materials. They also have a 1 pound promise, so they commit to taking care of shared wild spaces by removing a pound of waste for every product sold, by hosting and funding community cleanups across Canada and around the world. So I recently became a brand ambassador for them this year in 2019. And after absolutely loving a toque and a coffee tumbler that I bought for them over a year ago, I decided to ask them if I could be an ambassador. So if you follow me on IG, you'll see the wool blanket that I recently got. And it's featured in many of my posts and IG stories. I wrap it around me when I spend time in morning meditation. So take a look at all of their stuff. They have amazing hats. The blankets are just so cozy. If you want to get any of their stuff, you can use the code ALPHAFEMALE for 15% off at checkout. So that's the code ALPHAFEMALE, all one word, for 15% off at checkout on all products.